Oh, Florida. Such a bastion of sweat and boat repair work. And with that in mind, welcome aboard the Funny Boat Podcast. I am your host, Captain Boomies, and with me, the fuzzy-faced and slightly blurry broker with the beard. Hopefully this works, because we're doing one of those, you know, high-technology, remote whatevers. But how are you doing, Cap?
Yeah.
Any luck?
No? I'm doing fantastic, and I'm on time.
That's true. You are. Good job.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. You're devastated that you didn't get to participate in that one. But enough about you and your punctuality or lack thereof. I would like to talk to you about our guests today. But I feel like it's more appropriate for you to do the introduction.
Right? That's what I was getting ready to say. Maybe I should introduce them. Finally. All right, fans, Patreons.
As he drops the mic, quite literally.
Got it.
Just hold it.
I am pleased to introduce very good friends of mine. I've sailed with them in Greece. I've sailed with them in the BVI. I've sailed with half of them halfway across the world in the South Pacific. We have Warren and Erica from We Sail. Not on VA this time, but how you doing, guys?
Hey, guys.
Good.
We're great. We're really happy you guys are having us on the show. Really excited about
Absolutely.
This. It's been a long time coming. We've tried to do this for a while.
We have.
Yeah.
There was a time I realized we probably should have just done it while we were all sitting down having lunch that one day, or, you know, the Italian food. But I didn't even realize it was going to be both of you there. I actually had no idea what I was walking into, other than somebody said, "Do you want Italian?" And I said, "Yes, duh." And then we had a really fun little chat, but I actually stopped myself from asking you guys a bunch of questions because I didn't want to ruin the spontaneity of this podcast. Which is a very silly thing to do, because I probably would have forgotten by now anyway. And for those reasons, I feel comfortable asking you that, you know, you clearly switched locations from an outside in Florida spot.
Yeah, sorry, we're in the middle of a location change.
Yeah.
The connection wasn't doing so hot on the front porch, so we came indoors.
That is perfectly acceptable. Let's talk about, first of all, where is your boat right now? And what is your boat? Let's start there.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, most people know us by our boat first, right? You know, like...
That's how everybody's known.
Currently, our boat, Va, is in Fiji. Yeah. She is a 2014 Fontaine Pajot catamaran, the Helio version.
So she's 44 feet.
Yeah.
And we've been in Fiji. Well, actually, Erica's never been to
Fiji. I haven't been yet.
She broke her Achilles tendon, tore her Achilles tendon. About 9 months ago,
really. Yeah. It's actually, by the time we get back to our boat in Fiji, it will be pretty much close to a year since I've actually sailed on Ba.
Yeah. So we were in New Zealand when the accident happened. Actually, the boat was in New Zealand. Erica was in the BVIs partying and was dancing and tore her.
Oh, God, look, you guys.
Yeah, we just sound like the good guy here.
Yeah. I was hard at work, slaving away in the cold of New Zealand, down in the dirt and the mud, and Erica
left
was partying.
Me in the BVIs with Ed.
Yeah, that's right. Ed, you were there. Yeah.
I was.
I get to throw at least one of you under the bus. How's that?
Perfect.
So, that's boats in Fiji. I sailed with Ed. Thankfully, he joined me as part of the crew, and we took the boat from New Zealand to Fiji. That's why Erica has not gotten to see Fiji yet.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But, I also couldn't help but notice that you pronounced Fontaine Pajot very different than the rest of us do. Like, I just butchered it.
Oh, no. Yes.
I wonder why that is. Why is that?
why is that? Well,
I am French myself, halfway French, and so I've always understood as pronouncing as Fontaine Pajot, you know,
How do you guys say? Fountain?
Fountain Pageot.
Fountain Pageot.
Yeah. Fountain Pageot.
There's a reason they don't ever let me on their boats, you know.
Yeah. It's almost as difficult as Outremer, another French boat.
Yeah, we've been working on that one for years.
Is it Outremer? Is it Outremer? How do you say it?
Outremer.
Wow, we're never going to get that one.
No.
Yeah. Exactly. This is fun, though. I've actually always enjoyed the French influence on sailing vocabulary. And so, for example, boom is baume from the French.
Baume.
Yeah, exactly. Pronounce it the way she does, not the way I do. But like the etymology of a ton of these sailing terms come from, you know, illiterate French pirates trying to get along with the Dutch and the English.
True.
And some kind of mishmash happened, and now we have these words that I hate, like bow. I think is the dumbest word.
Bow.
Come on up to
bow.
The
bow. Yeah, it's not elegant at all, like most bows are.
It's just awful. But
even stern is heavy.
Can we all just agree? We should all just agree to adopt Captain Jack Sparrow, and we'll go with that.
Okay. Yeah.
His pronunciation on everything.
I got the rum. I got the rum.
Success.
Very good.
Proper pirate.
Okay, so let's back way, way, way up. You guys are a big deal on YouTube, but if there's anybody out there who's not familiar with you, where the heck did you get this crazy idea to go sailing around the world together?
Ooh. Oh, yeah, love it.
I guess, yeah, for the most part, I think we started just like every other sailing channel started, by watching Vagabond and Delos on YouTube and just looking at them being like, if they can do this, we can do this.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We were pretty, and we didn't know anything about sailing. And
as green as green could be.
Yeah. But we basically just kind of, I guess, started the whole idea or the thought when we went down to Mexico for Christmas one year. And as every good story starts off, Margarita's on a beach in a hammock.
Yep.
Fabulous.
And Warren saw a sailboat sailing by, and he just kind of looked at me and said, hey, I would really love to live on a sailboat and travel the world one day. And I just said, yeah, sure, let's do this.
That is pretty much exactly how it went. I had kind of harbored this secret, semi-not-so-secret idea that I was going to retire on a sailboat, and I wasn't sure if she knew that. So we were drinking, and I was probably slurring a little bit. And so I was like, hey, Erica, something you may or may not know about me, I'm going to retire on a sailboat soon, I think. What do you think? Basically how it went. And she was like, yeah, I'm game, let's go. When do you think? And I was like, I don't know, in the next year or two. I think I caught her a little by surprise.
You got me off guard a little bit, because I had just gotten a job and I was really excited about it. And he goes, how does 6 months sound? I just, like, my jaw dropped, and I was like, how is this gonna work?
How would we do that? It did not happen in 6 months.
Okay,
long story short, but we did start going immediately to boat shows and started walking on boats and started checking out. It was always catamarans for us, even though I love monohulls. I think they're so beautiful in the water, and I think that's where my heart would be if I wasn't living full-time on a boat. We would go with a monohull. But since we are trying to circumnavigate and we spend so much time on the boat, it was always a cat for us. So we started walking boats, and very quickly it was, we knew that we were going to be in the price range of the production cats, like the Lagoons, the Leopards, and the Fontaine Pajots were pretty much the three big runners at the time.
But little did we know, when we went to the Miami Boat Show for the very first time, we're walking on all these beautiful brand new models.
You mean little did you know?
Yeah, that's true. You can tell me that bit. And Warren goes, just so you know, we can't afford these ones.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, then why?
Why are we here? What did you bring me here for? Yeah, it was a little bit of bait and switch kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And I saw her getting so excited, I think the second day, so Sunday, she was like, I can do this. Like, I'm in. Like, I sold a kidney. You know, OnlyFans was just starting, so we're thinking about that maybe. And I was like, well, hold on, pump the brakes just for a second, because we're going to get a cat, and it's going to be a Fontaine Pajot, but it's not going to be like this. It's going to have to be a little bit used, you know, and so.
But it all worked out in the end, honestly. I think, I don't know if you believe in manifestation or whatever, but ultimately we got the boat that we really wanted.
Yeah.
Well,
both of them.
I like that you're talking about manifestation, because I think there's a lot of people out there who do aspire to do what you all are doing. You must. Yeah, look at him right there. Look at him go.
This guy.
But, you know.
Ed pointing to himself in case you guys aren't watching.
Yeah, right. There's poor Ed. The people who are following you on YouTube must constantly be looking at you as role models for their future plans. Is that who's in your
definitely
following?
Absolutely. That's our target audience. The people, I think that's kind of what we've gravitated towards, is more of inspiring people and hopefully motivating them to
live,
get out there and live
lifestyle.
And to live and to see that it is approachable and attainable, basically. So yeah, that's our target audience, are the ones that actually are really hoping to get out there and do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I would say definitely, like, it feels like it just seemed to have switched on us, because we were inspired. And I follow, like, for me, it's the ripple effect, you know, when you have someone you inspire to be like, or want to be like, or live like, and then all of a sudden you end up being that way or living that way. And then it just continues from there on out. Like, all of a sudden, all these people who come and either join us on our boat or do trips with us all have the same hopes and dreams. And I'm always pushing for it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what we're hoping.
Okay, you just said something that I think I knew, because Ed talks about you guys enough, that you do take on other people. Like, you let them come and join the party. And is it, what is that like? That's so crazy to me, because I have people all the time saying, like, I will come be your deckhand. I'm like, I don't need you. Yeah. Like, I get paid to do this. I can hire professionals.
Two different ways.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, the vetting process for us is extremely stringent. So the very first people that we had on board were...
I mean, we've let Ed on the boat, so that should be a lot.
Maybe it isn't that stringent, really.
The barrel is not that.
Jokes aside, the first people we had on board was actually, we were excited to welcome our 100th Patreon. And if any of the listeners don't know, Patreon's a platform where you can support our channel, basically. We don't make a whole lot of money off of YouTube, so it's a really, really great platform to be able to get a little bit of support from people who really love the channel and want to make sure that it continues. And this is widespread across all of the YouTube channels. We're very well known. So on our 100th Patreon, we had been advertising this for a little bit. And we
took a while to get 100.
It did. We took a while to get there. But we ended up with a great couple who actually we are friends with, pretty tight friends with to this day. We'll see again out on the water. And they were are aspiring to also join the crew. Join, you know, the elites of the cruising community. So they joined us in Tahiti a couple years ago. And then after that, it kind of just organically, you know, snowballed, really, in a sense.
I think another part of us wanting a catamaran too is not only just like the comfort and
the space and
that transition from land life to boat life is fairly easier on a cat than a monohull, I think most would say.
Mm-hmm.
But
agreed.
For me, I wanted people to come join us. I wanted people to come and experience this lifestyle with us. Like,
absolutely.
It just feels unfair to me to just do this by ourselves. And so when we invite people to come on, like, especially family and friends, you know, share this entire experience, because it's incredible. I mean, it has its bad days, no doubt about it, but man, I love sharing everything about this lifestyle with anybody who wants to give it a go.
Yeah, exactly. So we actually graduated
that's
from...
That's a dream, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, we don't want to...
Yeah, we don't want to dangle the carrot only. We want to actually be able to offer, you know, a slice of this and an experience. And hopefully the goal is to get more people out there and, yeah. and let them know that it's yeah. attainable. So that was the dream. And so it was pretty quick realizing that it wasn't going to be a whole lot of couples on our boat. So what we ended up doing was starting a thing every couple months. Well, about every 6 months, we'll go and do charters in remote destinations like the BVIs where we met Ed and other places.
We met Ed through Andy with the Ocean Cruisers podcast yeah. who started his... Yeah, and his whole dream with getting a huge fleet of boats and YouTube hosts on the boats, and that's pretty much how we got to meet you, Ed, which is mm-hmm. so much fun. I mean, it is chaos, but the best kind of chaos.
Yeah,
and
we wouldn't want it any other way.
The relationships that end up coming about those trips all together is incredible, because from that trip itself, we had repeat people come back, repeat offenders, as Andy likes to call them, come again to the BVIs. So we've done Greece and the BVIs with Andy on those trips. And we've just kind of expanded on our own personal level of just kind of like how we would run our boat. And I think that's what a lot of people end up kind of wanting to relate or wanting to come on a trip with us, period, or be on the boat with us, because they get so invested with us and who we are and our story. Mm-hmm. And want to and relate to us, and so they want to live this lifestyle somewhat the way that they see on our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And so they come on the trip with us, and we share how we would live on a boat. It's a small taste of it for about that week, but it's a really cool experience.
It is, because we really involve them.
Yeah, we make them do stuff.
We make them be part of the crew.
Yeah.
Which is partly true. That nobody has to do anything that they don't want to do. But generally, everybody wants to learn the sails. They want to steer the boat, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to bring it in and out of anchorages and, of course, raise the anchor and the sails and all that. So it's really, really... it's more than just a charter cruise where people are just chartering this boat to be shown around and cooked for, and everybody really becomes part of the crew, and that's been fantastic. And I think that's one of the best things that has come of this channel, really, is being able to run those several times a year.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I think it's interesting, you touched on it for just a second, but the fact that people get invested in your life and your lifestyle, and that is one of the things that I find really interesting about cruising channels in general, is you are putting it out there for all of us to have opinions on it.
Yeah, true. Nice. Really.
Oh, yeah. And boy, are there a lot of them.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
There are the armchair experts everywhere.
Was there any pushback from, you know, like the two of you just mutually decided that you're going to put your life out there, or did one of you say like, let's hold some things back? Like, how did that balance happen?
I don't know. I knew I had a pretty good idea of the finances in the very, very beginning, and I knew that we were going to be able to afford this boat, and I knew that we had enough, because the thing is the two ways that we got on the boat is we owned a home that we could basically, that was worth a lot. We were able to refinance it and pull basically a cash out refi and get enough money, a couple hundred thousand, to buy the first boat that we owned. And then we also had planned on keeping that home and renting it and then living off of the income from the rental, which was going to be about just a little over $2,000 a month, which is doable. It's on the lower end. It's on the lower end, I'm not gonna lie, but we absolutely made it work for the first year or two. But I had hoped in the very, very beginning, after watching Delos and La Vagabond, knowing that they were making a pretty good amount of money, that we could at least tap into a little bit of their shrapnel, so to speak, and hopefully, you know, pad our fixed income, which was the rental, and be able to live just a little bit better on the boat. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. It took a couple years.
Definitely took. It was more of a marathon to get to the point where we started to see that all the work we were putting into actually making the channel and filming ourselves and our lives was actually going to do something.
Yeah.
And just when we kind of gave ourselves that timeline of being like, well, if it doesn't take off or doesn't help us, we need to figure out an alternative.
Yeah.
Because we love this lifestyle. We love what we're doing. but how do we make this happen long term? And it just kind of started to come up and up and up, and we're like, okay, let's keep going. Let's share our lives. Apparently this is working.
but for the first almost 2 years, I would say we made, there was zero money coming in, and we were making videos almost every week. And it took a long time. And then we, like Erica said, we had a conversation. We're like, let's just, can we please give it, you know, I think at the 1 year mark, we said, let's give it one more year. And if it doesn't make money, call it quits. That's fine. It's, and we'll do something else. We'll figure out some other way to make this work. And about the 2 year mark, we started seeing a couple $100 flowing in. And then by the 2.5 year mark, it was up to like 500. We're like, okay, it's definitely climbing. And it's kind of basically just done that a slow, steady climb ever since. And we're certainly not padding our bank account much anymore, but we're certainly making enough to continue traveling around and living a fairly comfortable lifestyle.
I think the big thing that's changed too for us is, like, obviously money talks. Money motivates people to do certain things, but for us, I think we found a whole new level of motivation. Just the experience in general and what we've gotten to see and where we've gotten to go and remote islands and, like, the people, the feedback. Like, yeah, we get some comments that I, you know, would just kind of put aside. I read them all, but I put them aside because I just can't deal with the negative stuff.
You can't let them touch us all.
But at the same time, you know, going to the boat shows is a huge thing for us to realize what our life has done for others.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, is like the biggest takeaway that I continue to keep going and
it almost feels like paying it forward, like Erica said earlier, that we were inspired by La Vagabond and Delos were the main two, really. And now we're kind of in their seat where we are doing the same thing for others, and we're seeing that from the boat
ripple
show.
Ripple effect, baby.
Yeah, it's a ripple effect. And and that is unbelievable that we're getting to kind of pay it forward, in a
sense.
I'm
just trying to get into the mindset right now of, okay, it's Margarita Monday, and hey, there's another episode of La Vagabond out. There's another episode of Delos out. And like, you're sitting there going, like,
there's a lot.
Or, well, there's a ton of them, right?
Yeah.
And so were you just binge watching these? Like, did you... Did you also watch a bunch of, like, how to, or did those channels teach you what you needed to? Okay.
I wish I could say yes, but no, not really. We didn't really. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember. I mean, I do remember just, like, coming home from work, you know, like on a Monday, and be like, oh, what are we going to watch? Oh, La Vagabond, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we had our weekly days, whoever was posting their videos that week, you know?
Yeah.
But when it came down to learning sailing or learning how to film and edit, we barely did any of that.
No, we didn't. We definitely were both kind of like the hands-on, let's learn as we go. And that sounds, I understand that to a lot of people,
idiotic.
That's going to sound pretty reckless.
Yeah.
But I do believe that it is... It's similar into like flying, learning to fly. You bite off what you can chew. It's different in the fact that you couldn't just take a plane and just go out and just do a couple touch and goes and takeoffs without actually having any experience or a instructor by your side. But the idea for us was that we were going to bite off what we could chew and take it really easy. We were lucky enough to buy the boat in the Caribbean, which in my opinion is probably one of the best training grounds in the entire world, given that there's accessible parts, there's constant winds, the weather is pretty reliable.
The
community is huge. Yeah. Right, exactly. So
and
it's an incredible place.
More than like a day or two to hop to another island.
Like,
I feel like we were reared by the sailing community.
Yes.
To kind of like, oh, and we absorbed so much when we got out there. But anything beforehand, we pretty much just jumped in with 2 feet and
not knowing
and
anything.
Did it.
Yeah.
So.
I love that. I love when people go face first at this stuff.
Yeah.
It really makes me happy.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Right?
Just all in, all our money, own our own boat, training courses.
I got to say, half the battle with anything that anybody wants to do, whether it's sailing, whether it's learning something new or whatever it is, and complete switch up in your lifestyle, the hardest part is actually making the switch, actually doing it.
Making the decision.
I think
to
you
cast
can talk all day long. You can have these dreams. You can have these hopes.
Yeah.
But the reality comes down to what if you actually make that jump. And the fear around that is like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Amazing. So I get it.
Okay. That's, I mean, what a, I love stories like this because I'm chatting right now with a vessel that's doing an Atlantic crossing. They're checking in with me on a regular basis. It's an unusual boat because it's solar electric. And I know the captain well. He's done a couple of crossings. And for insurance reasons, he's their guy. But they are doing weather routing. They are doing all this very high-level stuff. And the whole time, I just keep thinking to myself, like, I know too much now. And I wouldn't do this.
I would actually say the exact same thing.
I completely agree with
What I know now, I wouldn't have done what we did.
Yeah. No. No.
I really wouldn't.
No. No.
Yeah.
In a sense, I do believe that we kind of got lucky because I do. You know, I also believe that we also did do it.
We hate failing.
Logically.
We hate to fail.
Yeah. And, you know, it can be done if you're really. I mean, we were pretty cautious. I mean, we were in the right place at the right time of the year. You know, we had the right training grounds and we took it pretty serious. We took it pretty serious what we were doing. And, you know, we didn't do even our first overnight was like 4 months into it. And we did one overnight.
You got to ease into it. There's all these levels of graduating yourself and making sure, like Warren said, baby steps.
Baby steps.
You know, what about Bobby?
You did all that, but looking back on it, we had a lot at stake as well, and there was a lot more that could go wrong. But here's another thing I will say to everybody too about that, if you're interested on this subject. Let's say that we got within the first few months or year, certainly we had the same amount of training and experience, certainly as somebody who had gone through a lot of the ASA training, right? Maybe even more. Mm-hmm. So we had that, and I don't feel like I wouldn't consider myself at the time or now. I would not say that either one of us were competent, skilled sailors until. Man, probably 3 years in when it wasn't it wasn't until we had crossed the Pacific and we had gone that was a big one and we had gone through our first season in French Polynesia, and it wasn't really until we had a very challenging sail backwards up, because you come into French Polynesia and the first islands that you hit are the Marquesas, then the second island chain you hit is the Tuamotos, and then finally the third one you're going to get to is Tahiti. And we had done that leading through the first season, and then on our second season we needed to get out of there.
Let's do that again.
Yeah, let's do this all over again. And we needed to get out of there for cyclone season. So we backtracked, which is possible, right? You got to watch your weather. You got to really know what you're doing. And I feel like those next 3 weeks, we learned more and gained more confidence and skill than we did probably the last 2 years, you know. And so I will say that it doesn't matter if you go through and you get your training. That's going to help immensely for sure. I'm not downplaying the importance of training. But if you choose to go that way, that does not make you a skilled sailor. You're not ready to cross an ocean by any means. Mm-hmm. And it's going to still take years to get to the point where you're going to be a skilled, competent sailor with...
I would say more confident than competent, because that's a big
huge
factor.
Yeah, you may be competent way before you're confident.
Yeah.
But I hope it's not the other way around.
Yeah, right.
There's plenty of the other way around.
It's a big mindset.
I mean,
it's a big mindset switch, you know.
Yeah. Confidence is overrated in this game. I think confidence is what sunk the Titanic, so don't ever be too confident.
Many others.
Yeah, it can get you in more trouble than you think.
You're never going to know it all. So,
you
are going to recognize some hairy situations before they show up. you are going to feel more comfortable bringing other people on board who maybe don't have the same skill sets you do.
Right.
You're going to,
exactly.
Because if it all becomes quicker access for you because you've done it for so long, now you're able to take on others. And I think that that must have been like the real milestone for you guys.
I completely agree. Yeah. You said it perfectly.
Yeah.
That's the stuff we didn't have the first year or first years. Mm-hmm. And that's what we finally gained and still gaining, obviously. I love that you said that. We are still gaining this, and we have a just the right amount of confidence, I think, to know that you know we can do this, but we have to be careful and cautious. So you said it perfectly. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, because I think, you know, Ed, the trip that you did with Warren from New Zealand to Fiji, there was another couple aboard as well, and they too aspire to live this lifestyle.
Very much.
But they didn't have necessarily the same sea time or ocean crossing time like you two have. And I remember her telling me as I was checking in with you guys, because I'm sitting on the couch, you know, with my leg up on ice, how are things going, you know? And it wasn't going great, you know? And I was getting like very small tidbits of information on how my boat and my man was doing. But Sarah had mentioned something. She's like, well, what I don't know. And you guys were in probably one of the most terrifying conditions our boat has ever been in.
The most, for sure.
That was fortunate, though, that they didn't know. The three of them had really not a ton of ocean experience at all, which was
great. Yeah, you and I the only ones that knew.
Day two, they would have been like, turn this sucker around.
Yeah, right? Can we go back? Done. Can we go back? How much longer is this going to last?
I got the, like, day three. Is it always like this? Yeah, this is normal.
More or less.
Oh, God.
Okay, so knowing what you know now, if you had to look back at some of your older videos, what is the one thing that would give you the most cringe that you know that you did before?
That's a great question. I think I know what you're asking. This may not be actually filmed, but if you're asking like what gives me the most cringe, just thinking back on everything over the last couple of years, I remember a couple moments.
Your hair, maybe?
No. For those that don't know, I wore very long hair for the first couple of years, and I finally cut it off because of the
perfect
heat.
Perfect curls, and he'd twirl it. Yeah. And I was like,
I was planning on being a pirate, and I realized I don't want to be a pirate with long hair. So.
But me either.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly, Ed. one of the dumbest things I think we had done, and this is 100% my fault, was when we were in the two motos. We took the boat in. This is our very first few weeks in the two motos, and we took the boat into a beautiful anchorage that we had to weave through bommies. So there was probably, let's just say that there was about a mile leading up to this anchorage where the depths were somewhere around 15 feet. So quite shallow, right? And it's quite shallow sand, but there's these bommies, so coral heads otherwise.
That just pinnacles straight out in the lagoon.
Yep. And so you can visually see them perfectly on a good day. And what I realized was that we ended up in this place that it was beautiful, right? But if anything had kicked up and we needed to get out of there was absolutely no way that if the seas had kicked up or if it was raining and windy, that we would have been able to spot these coral heads in time to avoid them. And that would have meant that we would have been absolutely stuck in this spot that had very little room to move around. If the anchor had started to drag, or if we had started to get swung around by different winds, which absolutely happened there and happened to us multiple times over the years, there, we learned, and I always look back to that moment, that it was like such a small thing and such a small mistake that could have been absolutely catastrophic. So that was probably like one of mine.
I got a list of those mistakes.
I think we do. I think we really do. You know, where we just flat ass got lucky, because it wasn't experience that got us out of there. It was just that we didn't, not all the cards got pulled, so to speak, at the same time.
I mean, like, I look back on it, truly, and, you know, there's a blessing in a way that we have these videos to look back and be like, one, it's so annoying to hear my voice, but two, like, what were we thinking on some of these things?
We knew better than that.
You know, we would have never done this really growing up or how we lived beforehand, but we just kind of felt this freedom to act like wildlings. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have taken, there's, by no stretch of the imagination could we, there were storms that brewed up all of the time.
Yeah.
You know, we were there, we were in that spot for probably 3 or 4 days. And a few weeks leading up to that, we, you know, just like in anywhere in the tropics, you have storms that are not predicted. They're just tropical storms. They last about an hour. They can kick the shit out of you and then they're out. And then you have a beautiful rest of your day. Any one of those storms, if it would have hit us in that spot, we would have been in serious trouble, I think.
Yeah. I just cringe in general.
That was cringeworthy for sure. That was a terrible, terrible choice.
Like our first year, and I totally get why sailors have a reputable to being more heavy on the alcohol, because, you know, you just deal with some craziness. The only way to really ease the nerves is to just have a little bit of rum.
Yeah.
You know?
Little
but
tincture.
That little bit of rum in the lifestyle can continue to roll. And our first year was heavy on the
heavy on the rum.
Oh, I mean, it is a different setting on your nervous system for sure.
Yeah, it is.
It is constant low hum of panic because you need to be on your toes. And that is a very difficult thing to weave in and out of physiologically. And, 100%. You know, and the more you do it, it doesn't go away. And I'm sorry, like, you know, 25 years later, I'm doing deliveries and
Exactly.
Yeah. I'd be worried if you didn't.
Sorry, interrupt.
Exactly.
I don't want to discourage anyone either, but at the same time, I agree with you because I thought my nerves would go, I would ease up a bit.
No.
Instead, my anxiety has actually increased a bit.
Because you know more.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You better lose that battery.
Okay.
The question was asked, you know, the cringiest thing you feel like maybe you did, not the best location. What do you feel the best proficiency that you exhibited?
No, I want a triumph now. No more deficiencies.
Yeah, that's exactly what.
Triumph.
No,
I want triumph.
Well, I get, okay, Warren's going to get the charger for the computer because it's going to die. But a triumph, this triumph comes from defeat. I will say that. We have to start there.
Okay.
This also happened in the Tuamotus. Like, this is in French Polynesia, these remote lagoon islands. They're probably one of the most remote places we've been to so far. And there's nothing out there. And you're not really protected from a whole lot. I'm going to maybe point the finger over to Warren a little bit. It was a little bit more him on what the issue happened. We were in a pretty big storm, 60 knots of wind, fairly consistent with 50, probably for a little over 24 hours. We lost a cushion that Warren had just sewn a couple of weeks beforehand. So he was super proud of this moment. And I'm proud of him for it too, but he was so eager to get this cushion back. And in haste.
Naive.
And in haste, he took off with the dinghy and went to go rescue this cushion. And I only say this now because this is truly like a triumphant moment of survival on Warren's behalf, because it did not go very well.
No.
He flipped the dinghy.
Well, I got to the cushion perfectly. Yeah. really quickly, actually. You guys.
Downwind. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly.
Downwind, no problem.
Yep.
Coming back to his beloved wife in this beautiful boat in a really remote location, he flipped it and
went
over.
The minute I turned it upwind, it flipped right over. It went airborne.
So instantly, I wasn't sure what to do. So step one, I grabbed the radio. Step two, I grabbed the camera. But I watched Warren.
Perfect. I'm so happy.
You know,
for insurance purposes.
I watched Warren survive and like come back and make sure that he was going to be okay, because it was one of the most scariest moments of my entire life, because I know at some point this may well happen where I end up on the boat by myself. Mm-hmm. And I know that is a massive fear for so many partners out there who just be like, well, what do I do if something happens to him?
Mm-hmm.
He did everything he could to just get back in the dinghy and survive. So
flip it back over.
Yeah, he did. And this took hours. Like, it wasn't like a very quick recovery or quick rescue or anything. And, you know, we look back on it and this is one of those like idiotic stupidity things that we would never do again.
Yeah.
But the triumph comes from after him being able to come back to me on the boat and us being able to go through and talk through everything, relive the moment and talk about those lessons and say, what are we going to do differently next time?
Yeah.
You know, and be able to come out of that together in the as a couple in this relationship, because I think that's so taxing on our relationship, is these incredibly stressful, high anxiety moments, and being able to like, okay, let's ease it. Let's ease back into this again. And so that we can continue doing this lifestyle.
And learn from our mistakes. And,
yeah.
Yeah. Be better.
That was very triumphant.
I'm sorry. I got to drill down deeper into this. Warren, what was going through your head?
Good luck.
Knowing that you were potentially not going to see your boat again.
Man, it was crazy. I absolutely believed that I could get the dinghy down. I thought my biggest challenge was going to be the waves when I got back to the boat and getting the boat back on the
davits.
Hoist on the davits, right? But I completely underestimated what 40 to 50 knots of wind feels like in a dinghy. I'd never experienced anything like that. And I had no idea that the minute that the nose of the dinghy pitched up on the very, very first wave, it just went up and that was it. And I felt like it just flipped over and pivoted from the engine. But from a boat that we talked to the next day, the thing was 4 feet out of the air. Like, it completely took off like a wing and was airborne for a hot second, and the next thing I knew, I was underwater, and of course the dinghy motor was swamped. And I remember actually the minute I hit the water, we had friends coming in about 4 days to join us for like a 10-day excursion, and I remember thinking, because my head popped up and the motor was still running, actually the prop was running, and I was like, Yeah. So I went to take a breath to dive down and try and hit the kill switch on the motor. And then I heard it go clink and it just stopped super fast. So I was like, well, I don't have to do that anymore because it sucked up water into the motor. So I knew it was swamped.
Right.
I was able to get the painter off of the front of the boat and retie it to one of the side handles. But
he was worried that our dinghy engine wasn't going to work when our friends were going to show up.
This was his thought process, not I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Honestly, this is beautiful. This is exactly what I expected. So I'm happy to hear this.
So the rest of it is kind of comical, because now everybody knows I'm alive and I'm unhurt. And Erica, like, there's got to be, of course, nothing is perfect. And you know, there's no rainbows yet, but everybody knew I was alive and well, and I was all over the boat and I got it flipped back over pretty quickly. But then, no gas tank. I was down to one oar. I'd lost a bunch of stuff out of there, and
no
the motor
radio,
was swamped.
No shirt. Everything was in an act of just haste.
Yeah.
Get the cushion.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. Yeah, you need to act on a quick manner, but at the same time,
you also need to be smart. And I was not smart.
No.
So I'm floating, and we were in an anchorage. The way that this particular anchorage was lined up was. It was he. Yeah, I know.
Sorry, I'm so sorry that I'm just dying.
Really comical.
Yeah.
Because I still to this day, talk about like past wounds, I just like can see him
just floating away.
Yeah. And me sitting there being like, yeah.
Yeah, right. There goes my husband.
My boat's all to myself now. Like, yeah.
Finally.
No more snoring. Yeah. So I'm in the boat, and the way that we were in the anchorage, we were all in a line because we were fairly parallel with the protected, the ring, the atoll. Inside the lagoon. So if I would have floated off, I would have had about 5 miles to go to the other edge of the lagoon, but I still wouldn't have been out to open ocean. It wouldn't have been comfortable and things, you know, I've been pretty tore up on the other side of the lagoon, but I wouldn't have floated off into oblivion. So there was probably 7 or 8 boats in the anchorage total. There was 2 in front of us. So now there's 5 behind us, something like that. And we're all in a line. So I'm floating by them, and I probably have the first boat I was probably 100 feet away from, the next boat I was probably 50 feet away from, and it felt like it was, you know, a mile essentially. And it was funny because I'm winded because it took a lot of work to get the dinghy over, and then I have one oar, so I'm having to paddle like this, and I'm trying to go towards the boat, and I'm facing directly towards, you know, the number 2 boat. And I remember them waving at me and yelling at me, come here. And I remember being so mad at them. And I even at one point yelled, even though I don't think they heard it. I was like, what do you think I'm doing? Like, I'm paddling as hard as I can towards you, you know? And they're waving me that way. I'm like, what, how does that help? And I missed them by a mile, which is probably like, I don't know, 50, 30, 50 feet.
So just to give you reference, if anyone's ever experienced wind at 40 to 50 knots,
not in a dinghy, I haven't.
Yeah.
Well, just go driving down a highway one day and put your face out the window and spit.
Yeah.
And then see where that spit goes.
Yeah.
So,
or try to breathe when you face the window at 50 miles an hour. It's
people are trying to throw him rescue lines.
Yeah, that was
that
the next
wind
few
is
boats.
Just slingshotting the
holy
lines.
Cow.
It was hilarious. It was hilarious because I was probably within maybe a boat length. Yeah, I was probably a boat length away from the next couple boats, and both of them had their rescue lines that they were going to throw at me. And just like Erica said, it was just like when you spit out a window at 50 miles an hour. Like, the spit makes it maybe a few inches out of the window. Their lines would make it maybe 2 or 3 feet away from the boat and then take off.
Yeah.
And they would do it. And I was watching. I was paddling, but I was watching them do it repeatedly. They would wind it up, throw it at me again, and it's making it maybe 1/8 of the way to me. And
by then he's already like,
and I'm way
six
past
boats
him.
Back.
So end of the story is I caught the very last boat in line. Thankfully they were way down the line and they were probably 2 miles from our boat. And they had heard on the radio that I was coming. And
I step one, grab the radio.
Yeah.
Then
yeah,
I grabbed
you did
the camera.
It. Yep. Yep. So yeah, Erica to the rescue. So they had strung lines on both sides of their boat, and they were fully ready, although there really wasn't much they could do because you can't toss a line much more than
but
a couple feet.
But they can let it stream. And letting it stream.
So they let
smart.
It stream.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was actually, by then, I had learned that the dinghy actually had some forward speed because of the wind and the waves were carrying. So I actually could steer the boat a little bit. And so by turning the dinghy motor in a certain way, I could actually guide it a little bit and get it to kind of like crab walk across.
That long to learn that.
Yeah. And so I was paddling my ass off, but also steering sideways across the waves and getting it to kind of crab towards their boat. And I hit it perfectly. I mean, I was within a foot or two of their boat by the time I got there. And they tossed me a line and tied off the boat, got me in. I'd never met them before and we're friends to this day. They cooked me spaghetti.
Yeah.
When I was there,
oh my
it was
God.
Great.
I love it. Thank you so much for telling that story. Erica, yeah. Thank you so much for doing the thing that I wanted you to do and grab the radio.
Ran overboard.
You know, thank you for filming this and making it so that people, you know, if you want to go relive this, audio form, it's apparently on camera. So please 100%. Go check these guys out. Erica Warren, where do they find you?
Yeah.
Where do they find us? If you just go on YouTube and you type in We Sail, and I don't know if anyone knows this, but We stands for Warren
and Erica.
Erica.
Yep. A lot of people don't. If you do, you're among the elite.
Yes.
And the smartest out there. Yeah.
But we try to put out videos weekly. You know, it can be bi-weekly, but it means the world to us just to follow our story and our journey. And we're an open book. Yeah. Like, we are not shy about sharing any of our stories.
Or mistakes.
or making stuff up, because I'm in a few of them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Well, you're an easy one, then.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, we had a great time.
I'm going to get us out of here. This has been the Funny Boat Podcast. Bon voyage. Seriously,
hi guys.
I really do need a drink now, though. That was
Bula.
Oh, that story.
Are we leaving that one again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.